Chapter 4. It was unbelievable. They'd all gone insane. This damned alien world had sent them all right round the bend, into bye-bye dreamland, along with the Creechies. He still wouldn't believe what he'd seen at that conference and the briefing after it if he saw it all over again on film. A Starfleet ship's commander bootlicking two humanoids. Engineers and techs cooing and ooing over a fancy radio presented to them by a hairy Setian with a lot of sneering and boasting, as if ICDs hadn't been predicted by Terran science years ago. The humanoids had stolen the idea, implemented it, and called it an Ansible so nobody would realize it was just an ICD. But the worst part of it had been the conference, with that psycho Lyubov raving and crying and Colonel Dunna letting him do it. Letting him insult Davidson and HQ staff and the whole colony. And all the time the two aliens sitting and grinning. The little gray ape and the big white fairy, sneering at humans. It had been pretty bad. It hadn't got any better since the Shackleton left. He didn't mind being sent down to New Java Camp under Major Muhammad. The colonel had to discipline him. Old Ding Dong might actually be very happy about that fire raid he'd pulled in reprisal on Smith Island. But the raid had been a breach of discipline, and he had to reprimand Davidson. All right, rules of the game. But what wasn't in the rules was this stuff coming over that overgrown TV set they called the Ansible. Their new little tin god at HQ. Orders from the Bureau of Colonial Administration in Karachi. Restrict Terran-Athshian contact to occasions arranged by Athshians. In other words, you couldn't go into a Creechy warren and round up a workforce anymore. Employment of volunteer labor is not advised. Employment of forced labor is forbidden. More of the same. How the hell were they supposed to get the work done? Did Earth want this wood or didn't it? They were still sending the robot cargo ships to New Tahiti, weren't they? Four a year, each carrying about $30 million new dollars worth of prime lumber back to Mother Earth? Sure, the development people wanted those millions. They were businessmen. These messages weren't coming from them. Any fool could see that. The colonial status of World 41, why didn't they call it New Tahiti anymore, is under consideration. Until decision is reached, colonists should observe extreme caution in all dealings with native inhabitants. The use of weapons of any kind, except small sidearms carried in self-defense, is absolutely forbidden. Just as on Earth, except that there, a man couldn't even carry sidearms anymore. But what the hell was the use coming 27 light-years to a frontier world and then get told no guns, no fire fully, no bug bombs, no. Just sit like nice little boys and let the Creechies come spit in your faces and sing songs at you and then stick a knife in your guts and burn down your camp. But don't you hurt the cute little green fellers, no sir. A policy of avoidance is strongly advised. A policy of aggression or retaliation is strictly forbidden. That was the gist of all the messages, actually, and any fool could tell that that wasn't the colonial administration talking. They couldn't have changed that much in 30 years. They were practical, realistic men who knew what life was like on frontier planets. It was clear to anybody who hadn't gone splaw from GeoShock, that the Ansible messages were phonies. They might be planted right in the machine. A whole set of answers to high-probability questions, computer-run. The engineers said they could have spotted that, maybe so. In that case, the thing did communicate instantaneously with another world. But that world wasn't Earth, not by a long, long shot. There weren't any men typing the answers onto the other end of that little trick. They were aliens. Humanoids. Probably Setians. For for the machine was Setian made, and they were a smart bunch of devils. They were the kind that might make a real bid for interstellar supremacy. The Hainish would be in the conspiracy with them, of course. All that bleeding-heart stuff in the so-called directives had a Hainish sound to it. What the long-term objective of the aliens was hard to guess from here. It probably involved weakening the Terran government by tying it up in this League of Worlds business, until the aliens were strong enough to make an armed takeover. But their plan for New Tahiti was easy to see. They'd let the Creatures wipe out the humans for them. Just tie the humans' hands with a lot of fake, Ansible directives and let the slaughter begin. Humanoids help humanoids. Rats help rats. And Colonel Dunna had swallowed it. He intended to obey orders. He had actually said that to Davidson. "I intend to obey my orders the same way, and in New Java, you'll obey Major Muhammad's orders there." He was stupid, old ding-dong. But he liked Davidson, and Davidson liked him. If it meant betraying the human race to an alien conspiracy, then he couldn't obey his orders. But he still felt sorry for the old soldier. A fool, but a loyal and brave one. Not a born traitor like that whining, tattling prig, Lyubov. If there was one man he hoped the Creatures did get, it was Big Dome Raj Lyubov, the alien lover. Some men, especially the Asiatiforms and Hindi types, are actually born traitors. Not all, but some. Certain other men are born saviors. It just happened to be the way they were made, like being of Yuraf descent, or like having a good physique. It wasn't anything he claimed credit for. If he could save the men and women of New Tahiti, he would. If he couldn't, he'd make a damn good try. And that was all there was to it, actually. The women. Now that rankled. They'd pulled out the 10 collies who'd been in New Java, and none of the new ones were being sent out from Centralville. "Not safe yet," HQ bleated. Pretty rough on the 3 outpost camps. What did they expect the outposters to do when it was hands off the she-creatures, and the she-humans were for the lucky bastards at Central? It was going to cause terrific resentment. But it couldn't last long. The whole situation was too crazy to be stable. If they didn't start easing back to normal now the Shackleton was gone, then Captain D. Davidson would just have to do a little extra work to get things headed back towards normalcy. The morning of the day he left Central, they had let loose the whole Creechy workforce, made a big, noble speech in Pidgin, opened the compound gates, and let out every single tame Creechy. Carriers, diggers, cooks, dustmen, houseboys, maids, the lot. Not one had stayed. Some of them had been with their masters ever since the start of the colony, 4 years ago. But they had no loyalty. A dog, a chimp, would have hung around. These things weren't even that highly developed. They were just about like snakes or rats, just smart enough to turn around and bite you as soon as you'd let them out of the cage. Ding Dong was spla, letting all those creatures loose right in the vicinity. Dumping them on Dump Island and letting them starve would have been actually the best final solution. But Dunna was still panicked by that pair of humanoids and their talkie box. So if the wild creatures on Central were planning to imitate the Smith Camp atrocity, they now had lots of real handy new recruits who knew the layout of the whole town, the routines, where the arsenal was, where guards were posted, and the rest. If Centralville got burned down, HQ could thank themselves. It would be what they deserved, actually. For letting traitors dupe them, for listening to humanoids, and ignoring the advice of men who really knew what the creatures were like. None of those guys at HQ had come back to camp and found ashes and wreckage and burned bodies, like he had. an ox body. Out where they'd slaughtered the logging crew, it had had an arrow sticking out of each eye like some sort of weird insect with antennae sticking out feeling the air. Christ, he kept seeing that. One thing, anyhow, whatever the phony directives said, the boys at Central wouldn't be stuck with trying to use small sidearms for self-defense. They had fire throwers and machine guns. The 16 little hoppers had machine guns and were useful for dropping fire jelly cans from. The 5 big hoppers had full armament. But they wouldn't need the big stuff. Just take up a hopper over one of the deforested areas and catch a mess of creatures there with their damned bows and arrows and start dropping fire jelly cans and watch them run around and burn. It would be all right. It made his belly churn a little to imagine it, just like when he thought about making a woman, or whenever he remembered about when that Sam Creechy had attacked him and he had smashed in his whole face with 4 blows, one right after the other. It was eidetic memory plus a more vivid imagination than most men had. No credit due, just happened to be the way he was made. The fact is, the only time a man is really and entirely a man is when he's just had a woman, or just killed another man. That wasn't original. He'd read it in some old books, but it was true. That was why he liked to imagine scenes like that, even if the creatures weren't actually men. New Java was the southernmost of the 5 big lands, just north of the equator, and so was hotter than Central or Smith, which were just about perfect, climate-wise. Hotter, and a lot wetter. It rained all the time in the wet seasons anywhere on New Tahiti, but in the northern lands it was a kind of quiet, fine rain that went on and never really got you wet or cold. Down here, it came in buckets, and there was a monsoon-type storm that you couldn't even walk in, let alone work in. Only a solid roof kept the rain off you, or else the forest. The damn forest was so thick, it kept out the storms. You'd get wet from all the dripping off the leaves, of course, but if you were really inside the forest during one of those monsoons, you'd hardly notice the wind was blowing. Then you came out in the open and wham, got knocked off your feet by the wind and slobbered all over with the red liquid mud that the rain turned the cleared ground into. And you couldn't duck back into the forest quick enough. And inside the forest, it was dark and hot and easy to get lost. Then the CO, Major Muhammad, was a sticky bastard. Everything at NJ was done by the book. The logging, all in kilo strips, the fiberweed crap planted in the logged strips. Leave to Central granted in strict non-preferential rotation. Hallucinogens rationed, and their use on duty punished. And so on and so on. However, one good thing about Muhammad was he wasn't always radioing Central. New Java was his camp, and he ran it his way. He didn't like orders from HQ. He obeyed them, all right. He'd let the creatures go and locked up all the guns, except little popgun pistols, as soon as the orders came. But he didn't go looking for orders or for advice. Not from Central or anybody else. He was a self-righteous type. He knew he was right. That was his big fault. When he was on Dunna's staff at HQ, Davidson had had occasion sometimes to see the officer's records. His unusual memory held on to such things, and he could recall, for instance, that Muhammad's IQ was 107, whereas his own happened to be 118. There was a difference of 11 points, but of course he couldn't say that to old Moo, and Moo couldn't see it. And so there was no way to get him to listen. He thought he knew better than Davidson, and that was that. They were all a bit sticky at first, actually. None of these men at NJ knew anything about the Smith Camp atrocity. except that the camp CO had left for Central an hour before it happened, and so was the only human that escaped alive. Put like that, it did sound bad. You could see why at first they looked at him like a kind of Jonah, or worse, a kind of Judas, even. But when they got to know him, they'd know better. They'd begin to see that, far from being a deserter or traitor, he was dedicated to preventing the colony of New Tahiti from betrayal. And they'd realize that getting rid of the Creechies was going to be the only way to make this world safe for the Terran way of life. It wasn't too hard to start getting that message across to the loggers. They'd never liked the little green rats, having to drive them to work all day and guard them all night. But now they began to understand that the Creechies were not only repulsive, but dangerous. When Davidson told them what he'd found at Smith, when he explained how the two humanoids on the fleet ship had brainwashed HQ, when he showed them that wiping out the Terrans on New Tahiti was just a small part of the whole alien conspiracy against Earth, when he reminded them of the cold, hard figures, 2,500 humans to 3 million Creechies, then they began to really get behind him. Even the ecological control officer here was with him. Not like poor old Keyes, mad because men shot red deer and then getting shot in the guts himself by the sneaking Creechies. This fellow, Atranda, was a Creechie hater. Actually, he was kind of splaw about them. He had gone geoshock or something. He was so afraid the Creechies were going to attack the camp that he acted like some woman afraid of getting raped. But it was useful to have the local spesh on his side, anyhow. No use trying to line up the CO. A good judge of men, Davidson had seen it was no use almost at once. Mohammed was rigid-minded. Also, he had a prejudice against Davidson which he wouldn't drop. It had something to do with the Smith camp affair. He as much as told Davidson he didn't consider him a trustworthy officer. He was a self-righteous bastard. But his running NJ camp on such rigid lines was an advantage. A tight organization, used to obeying orders, was easier to take over than a loose one, full of independent characters, and easier to keep together as a unit for defensive and offensive military operations, once he was in command. He would have to take command. Moo was a good logging camp boss, but no soldier. Davidson kept busy getting some of the best loggers and junior officers really firmly with him. He didn't hurry. When he had enough of them he could really trust, a squad of 10 lifted a few items from old Moo's locked-up room in the rec house basement full of war toys, and then went off one Sunday into the woods to play. Davidson had located the Creechie town some weeks ago and had saved up the treat for his men. He could have done it single-handed, but it was better this way. You got the sense of comradeship, of a real bond among men. They just walked into the place in broad open daylight and coated all the Creechies caught above ground with fire jelly and burned them. Then poured kerosene over the warren roofs and roasted the rest. Those that tried to get out got jellied. That was the artistic part, waiting at the rat holes for the little rats to come out, letting them think they'd made it, and then just frying them from the feet up so they made torches. That green fur sizzled like crazy. It actually wasn't much more exciting than hunting real rats, which were about the only wild animals left on Mother Earth, but there was more thrill to it. The Creechies were a lot bigger than rats, and you knew they could fight back, though this time they didn't. In fact, some of them even lay down instead of running away, just lay there, on their backs with their eyes shut. It was sickening. The other fellows thought so too, and one of them actually got sick and vomited after he'd burned up one of the lying down ones. Hard up as the men were, They didn't leave even one of the females alive to rape. They had all agreed with Davidson beforehand that it was too damn near perversity. Homosexuality was with other humans. It was normal. These things might be built like human women, but they weren't human, and it was better to get your kicks from killing them and stay clean. That had made good sense to all of them, and they stuck to it. Every one of them kept his trap shut back at camp. No boasting, even to their buddies. They were sound men. Not a word of the expedition got to Muhammad's ears. So far as old Moo knew, all his men were good little boys, just sawing up logs and keeping away from creatures. Yes, sir. And he could go on believing that until D-Day came. For the creatures would attack. Somewhere. Here, or one of the camps on King Island, or Central. Davidson knew that. He was the only officer in the entire colony that did know it. No credit due, he just happened to know he was right. Nobody else had believed him, except these men here, whom he'd had time to convince. But the others would all see, sooner or later, that he was right. And he was right.